Jope and the Bulldog.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody?
Monday, Tuesday, hump day is halfway.
It's Mike Jope.
Mike. What day is it, Mike?
And the Bulldog.
Hey, guess what day it is? Oh, come on, I know you can hear me.
It's Mike Jope and the Bulldog.
Guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
On WGR.
Hump day!
Sports Radio 550. Gonna be that in
an hour. At the moment, I am down a George Foreman rabbit hole. Ever been down one of those? The George Foreman rabbit hole? It's a pretty fun Wikipedia page, George Foreman.
Well, he's had a few different lives. Yeah.
Today is 50 years since Rumble in the Jungle.
I did see that on the social media machines earlier today.
Yes. I wanted to know how he was doing. By that I mean,
yeah,
if he was doing. Like, I wanted to know what George... It's not going to tell me what he's doing right now, but Wikipedia tells you 75.
Honk your horn right now if you are terrified that Mike is about to tell all of us that George Foreman has a boxing match the weekend after Thanksgiving.
He's fighting tonight. In Batavia. No. He did fight in Rochester once. One of many interesting things to me, perhaps only, about George Foreman's life. He fought in Rochester in 1989. At the War Memorial against Mark Young, who maybe was younger than George Foreman. But Foreman won. He was 70... Just wrote it down. 76 and 5. 76 and 5 for his career.
1989 is sort of in between. Like, is that the end of the first?
No, that's the comeback.
That's the comeback. That's okay.
Yeah, that's
because that went on a while then. Because I feel like I know I was living back here for a long period of time while he was active fighting, and I didn't know that that started as soon as 89.
So 87 is when he came back from a 10-year hiatus from boxing. He was 38 years old. And he got all the way to become the oldest heavyweight champion in history, beating Michael Moore. Were you interested in that when that happened?
I was, yes, but my dad's a big boxing fan. So, and when he was, I'm just trying to piece together the timeline, when I moved back from Connecticut, obviously, George Foreman, well, not obviously to me, obviously his career had already restarted because I moved back in the winter of 91, I think, shortly after the first Super Bowl loss. And so I was living with my parents while I went to Bus State and started doing this. I didn't move out of the house again until probably 94, 95. I don't remember the year now. So being at home, I, you know, knowing my dad was into it, yeah, like, I would sit and watch the George Foreman comeback boxing matches with my dad.
Okay. He lost his fight previous to beating Michael Moore for the title, but he was a big name. He lost to Tommy Morrison. Remember Tommy Morrison?
Yes.
So he lost that fight, but he was a big name, so he got a look at a title match with Moore and beat him.
We met Tommy Morrison.
Oh, yeah?
Back when I was working with Kevin Sylvester in the mornings, we did a remote out at a farm store in Orchard Park, Hamburg, you know, somewhere out there. And Tommy Morrison was, I don't know if he was friends with the owners or if it was a promoted thing in-house or whatever, or a contest, but we sat with Tommy Morrison.
12 kids, including five...
Back to Foreman, though.
Back to Foreman, sorry.
Right. Okay, just make trying to keep
up. I'm still on Foreman.
Yep.
12 kids, five of whom are boys and all named George.
Sure.
That's a known thing.
Yes.
Seven daughters. He was on The Masked Singer 2 years ago.
I missed that.
He had some sort of a Disney magic hour thing in his sort of post-retirement life here. Of course, The Grill. Who could leave out The Grill?
The Grills. I mean, there are numerous incarnations of The Grill.
So many.
Yeah.
He sold the rights to that, $138 million. And, yeah, a lot going on. George Foreman. Anyway.
When's the last time? Did you guys have a George Foreman grill at any point?
Never. No.
We did.
Were they great?
This is fine.
Fine?
Yeah.
So that was, like, in your house?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was not kept permanently. It didn't have a spot in the kitchen. I think it was in the basement on a shelf that was easily, hey, well, you know, I'm going to grill up some chicken quickly. Grab the George Foreman grill. It's healthier.
Yeah, like an air fryer now, maybe.
Sure.
Or
yeah,
a toaster oven.
Yeah. Really, the whole concept was, if you don't remember the George Foreman grill, The whole concept of the George Foreman grill was it's got a top and a bottom, so it's like, you know, panini type machine, and that's more contemporary, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Then I just want to make sure the references make sense if I'm trying to guide people who have no idea what a George Foreman grill is.
Paninis are very in.
Okay. Still, wow, that's amazing.
I think they are.
And the whole thing just was slanted forward so that when you put the top down over it and squish the food in it, the fat was supposed to run off into a little tray.
Oh.
That was it.
The picture of health.
Yeah,
George Foreman.
Right. until you know, might have been inclined to do shots of the fat.
Thank you for indulging me on shots of fat.
Shots of the fat.
Thank you for indulging me on my George Foreman rabbit hole stuff.
There's no ulterior motive, simply that it's the anniversary of that.
No, I wrote it down to mention it 5:52.
Oh, but
I couldn't get off the page.
Ah, I see.
And then the light went on.
Sure.
And I was on the page. I'm like, this is interesting. There's a lot about this guy.
That'll happen.
That, you know, you might not remember or have ever known.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we will bounce around a little bit today with, that for starters. the Yankee fan guys, who was the worst person in society. Armando Salguero today will join us to talk Bills Dolphins. And I wanted to start with Anthony Richardson.
Okay.
Talking to Ross Tucker yesterday, and he was, am I right? He's pretty much, they had to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to Matthew Collar Wednesday mornings on Purple Insider for his show. And Matthew, I think, I maybe flatter myself to say this, but I think of he and I as sort of like-minded philosophically. I want the data to prove me right or else I don't want to do it,
mm-hmm.
whatever it is. And Matthew was like, yeah, they had to do it. I'm like, oh, but his success rate was not as bad, or his efficiency was this was not as bad. What are their incentives? And we got into a long conversation about how it should be. And he's like, look, I'm just kind of spinning Matt a little bit here, but like, look, the best quarterback in the game sat for a year. Aaron Rodgers sat for a length of time, maybe 2 or 3 years. Jordan Love is good. He sat. Brady even sat for a year. So he wouldn't put it that, like, that just proves it. But it's an itch. Richardson, I'm not looking for a breakdown or to have a long conversation about him per se,
mm-hmm.
but just sort of what was the mistake in this? You and I both thought he should have been the first overall pick.
I loved the talent. Yeah.
It starts from a place where, and most football people like scouts and GMs would not say this about themselves, but I think you would. I know I would. Like, well, we really don't know. So just got to be bold,
mm-hmm.
and shoot for upside. And if you, I feel like I'm sort of taking on the mindset of the person who owns the team. You know, I'm the one who's going to be here the longest. So I want the player who can give me the best chance of winning championships. And that isn't going to be an offensive tackle, right? It's going to have to be a quarterback and give me the guy with the most talent. But maybe I bring this up because it's always easy for me. It's often too easy for me. Just like, well, put him in. Rookie contract. Mm-hmm. Go find out. If he's bad, you move on. Like, it's nothing. But I don't know. Richardson has me kind of wondering and just sort of like tilted a little bit. Not tilted. Just, I want to stay humble here about this, you know? Like,
yeah.
Because it's not everybody's the same. And here's a guy who, what? How many starts did he have in college? Like, just a small number.
How many? Well, it's 13 and 10 are the numbers. It's 13 in college and 10 in the pros, or 10 in college and whatever it is.
It's 10 in
those pros. Are the numbers. Yeah.
And this is Lance, too.
Yeah.
I think, you know, just hardly ever played, and his career never got started. Third overall pick.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot. There's so much that we don't know. And so, like, I don't, you know, want to speculate too much about what this guy's problem right now might be, but I honestly think when Ross said it, And when Matthew said it to you in a conversation I wasn't involved in, you know, they had to do it. I really think had to do it is pulling yourself out of the game. I really do.
That's why they had to do it.
That's why they had to do it. I think grown men on a football team would have to be, their minds would be, you're raw. Everybody that's played the sport has said the same. Eric Wood on Monday with me. I've never seen that happen. I've just never seen a quarterback. We've all seen guys turn their ankle or a hamstring or whatever. You know, they get pulled out for concussion, you know, diagnosis, whatever. Quarterbacks do not walk to the sideline like I need a blow in the middle of a drive. It just does not happen. And this is where, like, that, my walking off point is that is, and I said it a few times yesterday, I think the guy is showing you he doesn't really know how football works. And if you are the quarterback of a college team, an NFL team, an XFL team, I don't know, you should know how football works. You should know like a base level concept of what is and isn't acceptable within the structure of the sport. You should never have to ask for that. And so I'm guessing that this is just a public example that we all saw that the organization undeniably couldn't ignore. Like they had to do something. Because everybody saw it. All the players saw it. And maybe that is just the first time there's been a hint of, he doesn't get it. And I don't know, that could be aptitude, that could be intelligence, that could be the playbook, that could be a lot of things. Personality, I mean, who knows? But something's not plugged in there. And I can't keep going there if I'm running that team after something that, and I know it may seem silly. It's one stupid play. You're trying to run a business and a franchise. I just think it's a very bad sign for how that kid's wired. And I would have had no idea about that when we were talking about him as a draft pick.
I think the fact that, and you know, by the way, who knows if it was even something you could have discerned then. I mean, that's
right.
We don't know what it is, and we don't know what the signs were, if there were any signs at all, you know, right? So all of that is very hard to examine, but he got, it was like sort of doubling down on the quote mistake by admitting after the game that he just did that. And I almost think that that's like sort of makes me, I don't want to say makes him look better, but what that shows is he just, you know, you're saying this too, he doesn't really know procedure, you know, like
right.
he didn't know, does now, I bet, like that kind of thing isn't done. And especially for a quarterback, you know, a leader, and it's a close game in the second half, mm-hmm. and all these things. And that makes me think more about, again, like the investment these teams make and how well or not well they do at getting the most out of the prospect. And then there's always, too, the sometimes warring factions within the organization, like the differing incentives.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, again, like I'm thinking like the owner, if the coach is fired in a couple of years, I'll take that chance. You know, I'm in here to win championships, and I'm going to want, and this is a whole other thing, because this is like, well, you're not supposed to be involved in player decisions if you're the owner, because you're not supposed to know anything. And so only the football men can do that. But I don't believe in that. So I own the team. I want Anthony Richardson because I can see glory, you know? And a coach may not, a GM may not, because they're on borrowed time. Like I'm the coach of the team. I don't have time to develop
right.
Anthony Richardson. I've got to win games or else I'm going to be replaced. And so their incentive is different. I feel like now this is ownership. But that doesn't have to be right, because the whole thing about getting taken out or taking himself out really does mean a lot.
Yeah,
equation.
Right.
Probably.
I mean, the coach, I mean, like Shane Steichen, this is like any football coach, Sean McDermott. Your life is in the game. Your life is a sport. You've watched it. You've played it. You're coaching it at the highest level. You're standing on the sidelines of a competitive game at 3:30 or 3 in the afternoon on Sunday, and your quarterback is coming to the sidelines, like, tapping his head. What is even happening right now? And so I know it might seem a little silly to make that the turning point or the big flashpoint, but I just think it's optically, I'm guessing it's a small example. Well, it turned out to be a really big one, but it's a singular example of a guy who maybe has multiple times stepped in it around there, and they're all just looking the other way because they're hoping he can lead them somewhere because he's 6'5 and can run through a brick wall and also throw the football through a brick wall. Couple things I think the organization has messed up. Can you remember Josh Allen's developing? Do we want Cam Newton as a backup? No. I don't want someone so good that anyone in the locker room, forget about the fans, that anyone on the team will be looking sideways at the coach going, you know, we got another guy. Like, if Cooper Rush or some your name here, some version of Chase Daniel or something is the backup quarterback in Indianapolis, maybe they don't make this move. But Flacco's become this sort of folk hero figure with what he did in Cleveland last year. And he's always been like a, you know, somewhat polar, is he elite and all that from way back when they won the Super Bowl with Baltimore. It's like he's too good to be behind a kid who's still on training wheels. So that's something the organization did. And another thing they might have done is not pull him aside after the game and tell, like, someone in media relations, like, hey, dude, just so you know, you're going to get asked about that play where you took yourself out. You might want to say you tweaked something. Like, don't just say you were tired, okay? And, maybe it all happens too fast and there's not time for them to huddle up or something, but I think it's possible they just let him twist because they've seen enough of it already. Again, that's wildly speculative, but wouldn't you think someone in media relations could have helped him before he met the media there? And that they, I'm assuming, didn't, might be telling.
I don't know. I want to say again, I think it's easy to say, but that action, you might just need to explain to him why it's bad. Right? Because he doesn't think it's bad if he's doing it and then admitting it.
Right.
So I want to, I like thinking about just like, how bad is it? You know, so it's a bad look and your teammates have never seen anything like it and no one has ever seen anything like it. But one way to put it might be to say, like, well, it's an innocent mistake. I mean, in sports, you do come out when you need a blow. Like, that happens. That running backs do it every game. Right. So, but the quarterback can't.
Right.
And it's also an era where everybody's hyper focused on head injuries. And this guy's been hurt like four times already in his career. And it might make sense. You know, it made sense to him in that moment to think, like, just give me a play. It was third down, I think. And, you know, maybe it could wait. But
yeah,
it's a really interesting one. Like, he's younger than Shedeur Sanders. Richardson.
Right.
You know, he's been in the league for a year and a half now, though. He also, in 10 career starts, has completed more than 10 passes twice.
Right. The stats are stanky.
His first game in the league, he completed 24 passes. I watched that. Pittman was happening. Now they say, like, Pittman and Downs can't happen unless Flacco's on the field. He was happening that day. They lost the game. Then this year against the Packers, that was a game they were supposed to win too because Jordan Love missed, and 17 for 34, three picks. And now you have, so what happens going forward? The coach today said, like, kind of implied Flacco is staying in.
Yeah, this is not like we're giving him a chance to reset. This is, we think we have a better chance of making the playoffs if Joe Flacco is our quarterback.
This is the Bills' opponent next week. Who would you rather face? This is a fourth down topic for me.
I think it's close.
I would rather face Flacco.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I think the upside to Richardson, I think, is obvious. I mean, he could do something that could blow your mind. But it does not happen with any kind of regularity. I don't know that he is seeing where to go with the ball and accuracy. I think I would rather play him and just hope he's not going to make one of the throws that ends up on SportsCenter on me. Whereas Flacco, I feel like, you know, like Flacco rolls out of bed and throws for 335 and three, it feels like to me. And
like Jameis.
Right. I sort of feel like he could do that to the Bills. I'd have a very hard time imagining Richardson putting up a game that, you know, if the Bills are competent at all on offense, that could beat them. Flacco, to me, could. I saw him do it last year.
Yeah.
So, and he's done some of it already this year when he's played. So, I think I would rather play Richardson myself, because I don't know that I would want to trust it. I would think McDermott would be able to cook up, and Bobby Babich would cook up a bunch of stuff that could have that kid's head spinning.
I know, and I don't have to be. I think I'm in the minority saying that, but I just always want to avoid what's different. You know, like if it's a team like that, you go and play them, and you know what's happened with the Steelers now too. Like, I'm getting something different, and I'm not sure how to prepare for it. And I think with Richardson, somebody as young as that, you'd expect them to improve, and then you show up 1 week and they got it. You know, the matchup's right and they're playing with confidence. Who knows? I mean, you would think now it'll be Flacco next week for the Bills. They also play the Colts this Sunday night at Minnesota. So get ready for Joe Flacco versus Sam Darnold.
Prime Flacco time.
A game that was flexed in because we can't watch any more Jacksonville. So they had to pick a game. They had to pick one.
Well,
from the week 9 schedule.
I certainly agree with that.
It was supposed to be Jacksonville at Philadelphia. Yeah. We also can't stand any more New York Jets games, but we have one tomorrow night. Houston at the Jets to kick off literally week 9.
Are the Jets still favored in this game?
By 2. Yeah, I think they're the right side, but of course I would say that, right?
Yeah, you would.
So one question I would have about Richardson, you know, extrapolating it, is next year, do teams more often defer to, like, sit the guy and develop him? You know, we want the talent. We'll take the hit on the rookie deal point. We'll give up a year just to avoid. Because what happens this way, and is what's happening here in Carolina, is that it almost feels like there's no possible way the guy will make it.
Because
they've already chosen to pull them, you know, early to mid second season, which is really tough. You're trying to win games, all that stuff. Well, on what terms does he go back in?
Right.
Only when your season's over? I mean, that's not a franchise quarterback.
Yeah. And so are you going to just erase the dry erase board next summer and put him back at the top of the depth chart? Like, and that's when he goes back in. You know, what if Flacco actually leads you to the playoffs? What are you doing? How are people going to get behind that? That's the trick about it. Like, of course, literally, we talked about this with Zach Wilson last year. Literally, you can choose to put him back in. You can choose to have a news conference where you say, this is our starting quarterback again, and we think he's learned from his time away. But just good luck getting the he got pulled stink off of him. The teammates are going to feel it. The fan base is going to feel it. And you're just going to have a hard time ever getting back up that hill. That's why I think that what happened with him on Sunday and his explanation for it just slid him so far down. I think it's really hard to get back up.
Will teams be more likely to take their time with rookie quarterbacks after this year? I mean, the guys, he's not a rookie. Some of the rookies this year are doing very well. So I'm not sure this is the perfect moment for that conversation, but it makes you wonder, I think. 803-0550 to join us, just about the Colts, but quarterbacks, how they're handled, how the decision gets made, all that kind of stuff. Really interesting right now. Armando Salguero today, Sal Capaccio as well. Mike Shope and the Bulldog here, WGR.